Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. In a couple of weeks, hundreds of thousands of pro-lifers are going to gather in Washington to witness to life. Annually, we have them gather as heroic witnesses to the dignity and sanctity of the life of the preborn. Today, we talk with Doug Keck about how to minister to those suffering from the pain of an abortion, as well as a new EWTN program on the Witness to Life with Doug Keck. Inasmuch as the Church has done a tremendous amount in reaching the wounds of those who have been scarred and marred by the heinous evil of abortion, there's still a lot that we have to continue to do, because mothers who have undergone abortion are wounded in a particular way. Fathers who in some way are related to the pain of abortion also have wounds that need healing. And all those involved in the process, this is an issue that affects the common good. And therefore, this is an issue that wounds the entire body of Christ. And so we need to talk about all the resources that we put out as a response to this, in bringing Christ's love and healing and grace and hope amidst this darkness and the bleeding that happens as a result of the broken hearts wounded by this tremendous evil. We then speak with Father James Kubicki. Father James Kubicki is the author of A Daily Offering of One's Life to God, a book that provides an indispensable practice for every serious Catholic. Every day, the book walks us through, it's his newest book, and it walks us through a reflection for each day of the year, helping us to develop and reinvigorate a habit of offering each day to God, but also making oneself a sincere gift to the Lord our God, and in a deeper way to continue to make this act of offering throughout every single day of our life. Because the more we give unto Christ, the more we become conformed to His will, and the more He is able to do in us, and the more He's able to give us all those good gifts and perfect blessings that He not only promises us, but wants to give us, because He delights in us. And then finally, we speak with David Pinot about Taiwan, China. Taiwan's a small bastion of democracy existing in the shadow of communist China. And recently, David Pinot visited the nation and he saw firsthand how the citizens view themselves, China, and even the West. And we talk about all of this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, January 13th. It's the Feast of St. Hilary. Today's news brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need. VisitingAngels.com. President Biden is awarding Pope Francis the Presidential Medal of Freedom with distinction. The White House making the announcement over the weekend, noting it's the first time Biden has bestowed the honor on anyone. Biden wrote to Pope Francis saying, quote, "Your humility and your grace are beyond words," and called the Pope a light of faith, hope, and love that shines brightly across the world. Biden had to cancel his trip to the Vatican this weekend to monitor the wildfires in California. Speaking of those wildfires, Southern California officials are expecting the return of dangerously high winds as crews battled the deadly blazes. Malibu Mayor Doug Stewart said they're worried about what the winds will bring.
It is just going to be a struggle again, because if we have another fire start, we're going to be right back where we were.
Los Angeles County Fire Chief Anthony Marone said a Super Scooper firefighting plane damaged by a drone will return to the air tomorrow pending FAA approval. The death toll in the fires is up to 24 people, with California Governor Gavin Newsom saying there are likely to be a lot more. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says a breakthrough in ceasefire talks is on the horizon. Blinken said it's now Hamas's move to get it done.
The ball is in Hamas's court, but it's very close. And we are very hopeful that we get it over the finish line, finally, after all this time.
The Secretary of State cautioned that they have had moments before where the ball gets pulled away at the last minute. Blinken noting that President-elect Trump's choice for Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff has been, quote, a terrific partner in this, adding that Trump made it clear that he wants to see the deal before January 20th was instrumental in the recent progress. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Vita. Joining me, as he does every Monday, is our friend of EWTN, President and COO, Doug Keck. And we are talking about how to minister to those who are suffering from the pain of abortion, as well as a new EWTN program that seeks to witness to life with Doug Keck. Doug, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Always a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Always a joy to speak with you. It's been a while, and I'm really glad that we are kicking off this year by speaking specifically about the dignity of the unborn. And this is a conversation that constantly needs to be renewed, because we are the battle is far from over. We need to reinvigorate our efforts to fight for the rights of the unborn.
Absolutely. January, obviously, on EWTN, it has always been a pro-life month for us because of the March for Life, West Coast Walk for Life, as well as the One Life LA program that we feature, and all the other specials that we put on during the year, in January, especially about pro-life. And that's why this particular program you're referencing is the one, Into Life, Love Changes Everything, which we're running all week long. This week at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, featuring those wonderful sisters out of New York, the Sisters of Life. I'm proudly to say that they was produced by them and the McGrath Institute from Notre Dame and Campo Films. And people may not realize that Joe Campo worked very closely for many, many years with the great, wonderful Father Benedict Groeschel, and anything that Campo does is top notch, and we're really thrilled to work with the sisters on an ongoing basis and be able to roll this out for our audience in this month of January, which, even though the church tends to talk about October as a life month here in the United States because of the Roe v. Wade decision in the past and the March for Life, it's always kind of effectively been January.
Yeah. And given that EWTN, Ave Maria Radio, our efforts for the gospel of life really get redoubled in the month of January, I just want to pivot a little to talk about how unbelievable the wondrous work of the Sisters of Life is. Amidst the dark evil of abortion, these sisters stand as true beacons of hope. They're always smiling, of joy.
Absolutely,
And the power of the gospel.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I will tell you that the, you know, the sisters were founded by the late, great Cardinal O'Connor of New York. And again, very proud New Yorker. And we need more of those kinds of cardinals, like Cardinal O'Connor, who stood firm throughout his tenure there for life and was the one who really helped create the Sisters of Life. And was a great support for Father Groeschel and the CFRs, another wonderful order in New York. And so, yeah. And as you mentioned, life is exciting. Life is happy. Life is full of joy. And that's why we see those sisters like that. Whenever we see these things going on, we always see the joy in the March for Life of the people marching, the young people. There's a joy in there because they know the truth and they're fighting for the truth. They know it's something, there's a battle, but there's a sanguineness in them of that battle. And you see who we're fighting against, and you see the upsetment and the lack of joy and the anger, this deep anger that's in there. And that ties into, you know, the bookmark that I recently did with Reverend Ben Cameron from the Fathers of Mercy, our great friends, Healing the Deepest Wounds, who really talks about the fact that so many of these people, especially those who've had abortions, and many of the ones protesting against us are people who had abortions or multiple abortions, they have deep, deep wounds that in many cases it's because they can't forgive themselves over what they actually did.
And that's what's terrifying. Like, even as you're talking, I'm recalling the fact that in the little experience I've had sidewalk counseling, the anger, the vitriol is what really scares you more than anything. Not because it's scary to you in terms of personal safety, but more of it takes a lot for someone to be that angry. But you realize right. It's because of how dark this evil is that it engenders that kind of an angry response. And it's heartbreaking, to say the least. And so a book like Healing the Deepest Wounds is the first step in helping heal those wounds.
Really, and like you said, because these people are deeply wounded, and mm-hmm. even many wonderful Catholics inside the church who've had those situations where they might have made the mistake of having an abortion, or they were forced into that kind of situation, any of those things, then go and ask for healing, but can't believe they're really being healed. They go to confession, and they still have that wound in there. And sometimes people are too quick to say, well, you've recanted, it wasn't really your fault, and God still loves you, but so you can kind of get over it. And I think Father Cameron's whole idea was to say inside the church we have to be like Richard's Vineyard is, and he references that and some of the other things, including one of the retreats that the Sisters of Life give, that the idea behind that is that we really have to realize how deep the wounds are, even for the people who realize what's wrong. And it's going to take a lot to get over that. And we need to support those people while they're healing and be that kind of outreach that a Christian is called to be, speaking the truth in love and loving those who've made those mistakes, and realize it's such a deep wound for a mother to have killed their child. And then you've got the externals of the family. In many cases, you've got a lot of guilt by the people who might have pressured that person, their friend, right. or their mother, or the father. And those people don't want to see you suffering. They because that reminds them of what they did or they participated in. Even our Holy Father said, the abortionist is like hiring a hitman. Yep. And so you got the hitman. Somebody paid the hitman. So if I paid the hitman, then I really don't want to hear about it. As much as I love you too much to hear that you're still in pain, but it doesn't take the pain away. And that's why I think his book is really about trying to reach people and to convince people who are working with people who are suffering from the wounds of abortion to realize how deep those scars go.
Yeah, and hearing you talk, Doug, one of the things I'm realizing that has to be put forth. I remember as an atheist, I used to have this real hatred for the Catholic Church because I deliberately misrepresented where she stood. The truth is, everything I've seen about the Catholic response, even to those who have procured abortions, is compassion, which is unthinkable for those outside of the love of Christ. But in the Catholic Church, the desire is, we still want the salvation of your soul. We still want you to come to the healing and the love of Christ. And so drawing into the compassion, healing love of Christ is what marks our work in the pro-life movement.
Absolutely. And it is that balance. It's the balance of speaking the truth in love.
Yep.
Not false compassion, not misguided mm-hmm. compassion, telling people that what they did was okay because we don't want them to feel bad. Because you know what? They feel bad anyway because inside they know what the truth is. And so what you have to do is be able to comfort that person and say, listen, who knows what the dynamics were that you went through in those situations? Only you know. But mm-hmm. the one thing you can trust in is ultimately that God knows everything. And if you've repented this or you're open to repenting it or you see that this is wrong, he understands, okay? It doesn't mean, it's just like the woman caught in adultery. Go and sin no more, okay? It's the same idea, which is to say, it's no one's saying it's okay, but we're saying God's love will overcome it. But it takes a long time for people to accept that because it is such a deep wound. And the problem you have also is that once one person has an abortion, the likelihood that they'll have more than one is very high. So when you hear the number of abortions out there, it's not that everybody's having an abortion. It's that in many cases, there's a smaller group of people who are having multiple abortions.
Right. Like you mentioned, the first time one has procured one, the statistical likelihood of it happening to that individual just keeps jumping with each subsequent abortion. And so in the face of all of this, with the programming EWTN is putting out and Healing the Deepest Wounds, we have remedies to move forward. Thank you, Doug, for your time.
Thank you for inviting me, and I hope you check out our programming.
My guest, Doug Keck, President and COO of EWTN. Check out EWTN's programming throughout the month of January as we fight for the right of the preborn to live and healing the deepest wounds by Father Ben J. Cameron. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Jesus Christ, as I say in my book, Extreme Makeover, Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture, is the biggest woman's lipper that ever walked the earth. He was well ahead of his time in the way he related to women, the way he spoke to women, the way he included women in his ministry. If you don't believe me, go to the Gospel of John and read the encounter of the Samaritan woman. Jews did not mix with Samaritans. And yet there Jesus was sitting in a well, the Samaritan woman comes along. And she is coming at the middle of the day because she's living a very, very questionable life. She's coming to the well to avoid the looks and the stares and the comments and the gossip. She comes at midday when pretty much no one be around except there is God waiting for her at the well.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The practice of making a daily offering, especially in the morning, to our Lord is a crucial part of the spiritual growth of a Catholic. And a daily offering of one's life to God, it ought to be an indispensable practice for every serious Catholic. Father James Kubicki's newest book presents a reflection for each day of the year to help develop or at least reinvigorate this habit of beginning each day by sincerely offering it to Christ. He joins us to talk about this book and even the practice of making a daily morning offering. Father James Kubicki is a Jesuit, ordained in 1983, and National Director of the Apostleship of Prayer from 2003 to 2017. He currently leads retreats and parish missions while serving as Spiritual Director at St. Francis de Sales Seminary in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Father, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Oh, you're very welcome, Dr. Peter. Good to be with you and with all your listeners. I'm doing well. It's a little cold here in Milwaukee where I live, but anyway, it's bright sunshine.
Yeah, the Midwest has reduced itself to a bit of a frozen tundra of late, and we're all feeling it, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Father, honestly, this is striking a chord in my own heart, which is the reason why we're having this conversation. I've only been a practicing Catholic for 14 years now, and I must admit the practice of a daily morning offering has truly become an indispensable part of my family's life, because we notice the days when we do it. We also notice the days when we don't do it. There's a rich spiritual heritage at play here that we ought not take for granted.
That's right. You know, with a daily offering prayer, and I first learned this when I was in high school. I went to a Jesuit high school in Milwaukee, and we learned about the daily morning offering, and I've been praying it ever since. Even when, you know, before I get up out of bed, first thing I wake up, I pray that daily offering prayer. And I think the idea behind it is that every day is a gift from God. Our life is precious, and time is precious. And so to receive each day as a gift from God and to return love for love, you know, offering ourselves back to God with a daily offering prayer, can help us be more conscious of how precious time is and how every act of our day can be made into an act of love for God.
And therein lies the great issue, too, that God is actively involved in our lives, and He is calling us to be cognizant of that. So the daily offering is really us letting God into our souls rather than us offering to God what He already knows to begin with. And when we take that for granted, it's easy to think we're fighting this life alone.
Oh, that's for sure. And that's why I think, you know, what maybe makes my book unique is, you know, there are lots of daily reflection books, but this takes the saints of the day and the seasons of the year and takes even prayers from the saints where they made an offering of themselves so that, you know, we realize we're part of a communion of saints, that we're part of this group, the body of Christ, and we're not alone in our day. And so if we join our offering to that of the saints and of the entire church, we know that it makes our offering even more significant. But what I think also makes my book unique is that at the end of each one-page reflection, there is a review question to look back on the day that we offered God. And I think, Dr. Peter, that's the way that we can be, again, as you said, more cognizant of God's presence in our daily lives. If we make an offering at the beginning of the day and then at the end of the day, look back on the day we offered, it helps us to be more aware during the day of the opportunities we have to show our love for God, but also of the ways that God is showing His love for us.
Right. And that's why one of the hidden themes, if you will, of your book, as I've come to discover, is that it's not just about that one act of offering in the morning. There's this participation in our baptismal priestly call and this living out the liturgy in life, that throughout the day we are seeking these moments of offering unto God. Throughout the day we are allowing God into the ordinary, mundane, transient things of our life, that all of a sudden these might be true occasions of God's grace transforming us to make us more conformed to Him.
Oh, that's so true. And, you know, having just celebrated the baptism of our Lord, and hopefully we're reminded of our own baptisms, at our baptisms, we were consecrated with the sacred chrism. And the prayer that is said is that as Christ was a priest, prophet, and king, so we share in His royal identity and priestly and prophetic identity as well. And the way we exercise our priestly identity is to offer worship to God. That's what priests do, and we do that in our daily lives by doing what St. Paul said in his letter to the Romans, chapter 12, verse 1, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, your spiritual worship. So the morning offering prayer, the daily offering, helps us to exercise our priestly call through that we receive through baptism, but it's also a way, I think, that we live the Eucharist in our daily lives. With every celebration of the Mass, we place ourselves on the altar with Christ, who offers Himself to the Father. He renews His offering of Himself to the Father and invites us as members of His body to join Him in that offering. And then we have to go out and live the offering that we make with every celebration of the Mass. So I think, you know, the practice of a daily offering prayer is a way that we're more connected to the sacraments we have received, the sacraments of baptism and the Holy Eucharist.
And so, Father, in that wisdom, I want to ask you, you're a spiritual director, so in the spirit of that kind of fatherly pastoral wisdom, why is it that we find it so difficult to seek out these occasions of daily renewal? We seem to understand this on practical terms. My wedding wasn't a one-time event. Every day I renew my life as a husband, and your ordination wasn't a one-time event. But for some reason, when it comes to our bond with God, we seem to think, okay, I'm consecrated to God, and there's no need for this daily renewal, when in reality, more than anything, that is what we need.
Oh, that's so true. You know, just as you mentioned, you know, the marriage is more than the wedding, more than that time that you committed yourselves to each other. It has to be lived out one day at a time and in every moment of the day. So just as in a marriage, you can't say, okay, I gave 12 hours to my wife, to my family. Now this time is mine. No, we all need time for ourselves, but no time is ours. It's some way that we show our love for God, but also our love for our families and our love for our spouses.
Yep. And that's why this call of living the covenant life in God necessitates that we're constantly turning our face to behold His and making all these small areas of our life that even the ones that we think God is not interested in, those are the very things we ought to invite Him into and to consecrate back to Him.
That's so true. You know, it doesn't mean we have to be working all the time or praying all the time. Father Walter Chizik, servant of God, Jesuit priest who spent years in the Gulag in the Soviet Union, wrote a book called He Leadeth Me. And in there, he says, you know, we can't be conscious of God at every moment, thinking about God. If you're a surgeon working in the hospital, you have to be focused on the surgery you're doing. But you can make every act of yours an act of love for God by beginning the day with that daily offering, and then from time to time throughout the day, maybe reminding yourself of the offering, going back and recognizing, okay, as I was doing surgery, I was serving God because I was doing it for love of His people and for His glory. So in that way, we really live a life of dedication.
Yep. And dedication is the word. Every day, waking up, seeking the grace of God to give all of my being for the sake of what He has called me to be and who He has called me to be, and joining it to the church's work in liturgy, the church's work in worship of the one true God.
That's right. You know, the daily offering prayer, I think, was popularized by a group called the Apostleship of Prayer. It's now known as the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network. And going back to the 1800s, when some Jesuit seminarians felt they were wasting their time studying philosophy when they wanted to be out on the missions, their spiritual director told them, look, any work of the church is a spiritual fruit that needs to be watered by spiritual means. And you have those means at your disposal right now.
Thank you, Father. We have to cut off there. I'm sorry. My guest, Father James Kubicki. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry providing families nationwide with a better solution centered around whole health, spirit, mind, and body. Our members share their medical burdens within a faith-filled community. At CMF Curo, our members have access to a spiritual director, concierge services, and other health and spiritual resources. Find out if CMF Curo is a better solution for your family. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise is more popular than ever. Every year, couples testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. The 2026 cruise is already three-quarters full, so if you want to join, now is the time. Special guests include musicians Andrea Bocelli, Matt Maher, Sarah Kroger, and John Ignatie, as well as hosts from Ave Maria Radio. Fun, romance, devotion. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Travel tab to find out more.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 8, verse 51.
Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets, all the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
When I've had enough. I ask parents, when do you decide to discipline? One of the most common answers is, when I've had enough. If discipline is designed to teach, then we need to discipline before we've had enough. We need to discipline because the behavior's wrong, not because emotionally it's pushed us to our edge. Besides, when you get to when you've had enough, you're much more likely to yell and scream and say things that you have to go to confession for. So, the suggestion is, discipline out of principle, not emotion. Principle means because it needs discipline, and I'm going to do it when I'm calm. Emotion means I'm going to be moved to do it just because I'm mad.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Taiwan, as many of us listening know, is a small bastion of democracy that exists in the shadow of communist China. David Pinault recently visited the nation and saw firsthand how its citizens view themselves, China, and the West. He joins us to talk about this. David is an emeritus professor of religious studies at Santa Clara University. Among his two books are two titles published by Ignatius Press. Among his books, The Crucifix on Mega's Front Porch, A Christian Companion for the Study of Islam, and a novel called Providence Blue, A Fantasy Quest. In April, Ignatius Press is also publishing a new novel by David about communist China's involvement in the illegal trafficking of wildlife, and it's called Earth Dragon Runner, Spiritual Entertainment. David, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Peter. It's really a pleasure to be with you today.
So, I read the piece that you wrote in Catholic World Report, and I was considerably intrigued by how Taiwanese individuals, especially the more mature adults, the ones who have seen firsthand what they have as a heritage and what stands to be lost, in light of the Chinese Communist Party. So let's build our framework for conversation there.
Great, yes. My wife Jody and I were there recently, and we were struck, first of all, by the sharp difference in mood and public tone in Taiwan compared, for example, to a visit I've done to places like Shanghai.
Right.
On the mainland, walking around, understandably, a lot of people just don't want to talk to you as a foreigner. You know, there are surveillance cameras everywhere. And there, the Chinese Communist Party issues warnings constantly against talking to foreigners. You know, so you really have the feeling as a stranger in a city like Shanghai on the mainland in communist China, you're on your own. You know?
Right.
But in Taipei, in the capital city of Taiwan, we were so impressed by the warmth, the hospitality, the friendliness, the openness of people. As I mentioned in the opening of the essay, it's a good way to meet people. Using mass transit, because the first time you use a metro or subway system, you're going to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that happened to us, and we're puzzling over the subway map, people would come up to us. My knowledge of Mandarin is fairly scant. But between that and people's attempt to use English, we made out fine, and people would go out of their way to help us. When we were above ground, they'd walk with us like four or five blocks to make sure we got to our destination. And that sense of hospitality and openness, to me, immediately struck me as part of the heritage that comes with being an open society and a democracy.
Right.
That's something precious, and the people of Taiwan know that they have something precious. They want to keep that.
And that's crucial for all of us to understand, that Taiwan really does has established itself as a kind of bastion of free market principles, liberal, when I say liberal, I mean in terms of liberal art, liberal philosophies in terms of the acknowledgement of the dignity of the human person, and therefore the acknowledgement of societal human flourishing. All of these things that are philosophical underpinnings of Taiwan's flourishing don't exist in mainland China, and therefore they understand the kind of threat the CCP poses to their way of life and ultimately to the system, even economic system of flourishing that they have established.
Yes, exactly. And so glad you mentioned this. One thing that we noticed again and again, people pointed to the recent experience of what happened to the people of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners may already know that until 1997, Hong Kong had been a crown colony of Britain. In 1997, when Hong Kong was handed over to the rule of the Chinese Communist Party, it was with the written understanding that Hong Kong would be a so-called semi-autonomous region under what the Chinese Communist Party called one country, two systems, meaning that as a semi-autonomous region, Hong Kong would have some of the same freedoms and, as you said, the dignity of the individual person that it had enjoyed as a British Crown colony. But under the recent so-called national security law passed in 2020, what has happened is the crushing of independence and personal dignity for the people of Hong Kong. The people of Taiwan are very aware of this. They know that Xi Jinping, the current maximum leader of the Communist Party, is not going to be satisfied just with Taiwan. And here it's important to point out the importance geographically of Taiwan, where it is situated. Listeners may know already, Taiwan is an island that's located just off the southeast coast of China, near the provinces of Fujian and Guangdong, what used to be called Canton, not far actually from Hong Kong and Macau. To the south of the island of Taiwan, you have the Luzon Strait and the northern Philippines. And then to the northeast, you have the Korean Peninsula, and then Okinawa in the southern island chain of Japan. General Douglas MacArthur, way back in the 50s, you know, referred to Taiwan as an unsinkable aircraft carrier. Now, that's a military term, but nonetheless, good for us to meditate on for a second. In other words, you know, you and I will be concerned first and foremost with the human dignity of the people of Taiwan and their own expressed wish to keep their independence as free human beings. But at the same time, what happens to Taiwan matters to all of us because of the fact that if Communist China takes Taiwan, they're not going to be satisfied with that.
Yep.
They're not going to be satisfied that they are going to keep encroaching on the freedom of other neighboring nations, and that will affect us.
And based on your conversations with the people on the ground of Taiwan, it's very clear that they want to continue to uphold the way of life that they have established. So them, Taiwan being an island poses benefits, but it also poses certain challenges for itself. As a benefit, mainland China and the Chinese Liberation Party would have to cross the straits in order to take Taiwan by force. But on as a detriment, however, because it's an island, it doesn't have copious amounts of military resources to defend itself against an all-out onslaught.
That's right. And we all need to keep in mind, too, that population of Taiwan, approximately 25 million people, across the Taiwan Straits, which, remember, is only about 95 miles wide, across the Taiwan Straits, mainland China, we're talking 1.4 billion people.
Right.
And that, you know, with a very large standing military. We had the privilege, while we were there in Taipei, to have dinner one night with a retired diplomat from Taiwan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And he talked to us at length, along with some other professional colleagues of his, about his vision of what Taiwan should do. he's well aware of the fact that if the so-called People's Liberation Army of China brings its full force to bear across the straits, Taiwan's going to be in serious trouble. But he said that what we need to do, he says, what he's advocating himself, is, first of all, that Taiwan build up its military defense forces, buy more armaments from America, especially with regard to things like drones, submersible sea mines, missiles, anything to slow up the seaborne and airborne invasion force.
Right.
And then second, more attention given to, which is going on now, what are called civil preparedness groups. Mm-hmm. There are civilian groups throughout the island now that are teaching people first aid skills, map navigation, disaster preparedness, and all with the mind towards what he calls the fallback plan. A lot of people are not aware of the fact that there are several hundred mountains in the interior of Taiwan. Each of those mountains more than 10,000 feet in height. Taiwan has already begun to stockpile munitions and food and so forth in the interior. And what he's been advocating is that there be more training, and actually this is something the United States is doing too, in making its military forces more mobile, splitting large groups up into small, highly mobile units. And I know that the U.S. Marine Corps is doing that also right now in exercises in the northern Philippines, so that in the event of an invasion, the Taiwanese forces can divide up into guerrilla groups.
So we're going to continue this conversation with David Pinault, Emeritus Professor of Religious Studies at Santa Clara University. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Stewardship of the Environment, God's Creation of Nature. When you hear the message, "Be a wise steward of your resources," do you ever consider the role you play in your community environment? It's natural to think of time, talent, and treasure when stewardship is mentioned, but our faith teaches us that all is gift from God. Thus, respect for nature and doing our part to ensure a safe and clean environment is important. Here are just three areas we can pay more attention. A lot of action has been taken in recent years by nonprofits geared towards a cleaner environment. The first area of focus is to eliminate litter. Consider how your actions to pick up after yourself are pleasing to God. Be proud to do your part to keep your community and neighborhood clean. Secondly, look at ways to recycle and make the most out of your purchases. Does it matter to you that so much plastic consumes our landfills? Have you given thought as to how you can make a particular purchase last longer? Third, in a country filled with abundance, what's being done to ensure our nature and environment for the next generation? This is more than eating bread crust and cleaning off your plate. The root lies in not wasting what we've been given. There's a great deal of time and effort that goes into caring for our place of residence in addition to our possessions. Keeping up what is ours or giving our used possessions to the less fortunate are a couple of ways to be prudent stewards of our blessings from God. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We are talking about Taiwan, a small bastion of democracy existing in amidst the shadow, truly, of communist China and some of the threats that it might be facing in the future. We're talking with David Pinault, Emeritus Professor of Religious Studies at Santa Clara University. David, as we were talking earlier, before the break hit, one of the things that we are going to see happening, and in fact it's already happening, is that China is not going to go down without a fight. So they have numbers as their advantage. But the other thing that they have historically done, and unfortunately done well, is the spreading of propaganda, subtly at first and then explicitly after the fact, in trying to push their way of life on Hong Kong and therefore, in this case, Taiwan.
Yes, that's right. And that campaign, I want to emphasize, you're absolutely right. And they've done it in Hong Kong to weaken the population,
mm-hmm.
and in Taiwan and worldwide as well, and very much targeting the United States of America as well. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
And that's something that we have to look out for, because historically we always know that this kind of propaganda follows anywhere from forceful to even vitriolic conquest. And that seems to be what mainland China might have in mind for Taiwan in the future.
Yes, exactly. And it's something that we have to be very much vigilant against. The stakes are very high. I have heard some people say, like when we've come back from Taiwan to the States, I've had some colleagues say to me, well, you know, how much difference does it really make? After all, we have such tight economic ties. It's much, much more difficult to try to contend with China than it ever was against the communists of the Soviet Union, because in the end, we did not have even a fraction of much as many business dealings with the Soviet Union as we do now with communist China.
Right.
And so I would say that there are a couple of things that we have to be aware of when we're dealing with communist China. And one is the fact, I would call it the appeal of money, the temptation of materialism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, again and again, I have noticed as kind of sometimes an unspoken undercurrent in the apathy with which some people in the United States regard this threat from communist China. That's one factor. The second that I've noticed is occasionally when I have spoken to people about what I regard as the number one international threat in the world, which in my mind is the Chinese Communist Party, then what happens is some people say, oh, well, is there some kind of racism involved there on your part? And that's a card that Chinese communist propaganda makes use of very frequently.
Right,
whenever they get criticisms from the West, from America, they say, oh, there's some kind of racism element involved. And my reply to that is, and I say this on the basis of having been not only in Taipei, but also having done work in China itself, there are many, many stalwart Chinese who themselves oppose the Chinese Communist Party, which leads to the third point, and this is so essential, that the Chinese Communist Party prides itself on, and this especially is true of Xi Jinping, their maximum leader, prides itself on running the country on a basis of so-called scientific atheism. And throughout China, they do everything they can to suppress the practice of religion because they sense that any system of thought, including Christianity and Catholicism, any system of thought that advocates the dignity of the individual and the worth of individual conscience and the idea of a transcendent power that supersedes all the principalities and powers of this world, well, that's a direct threat to the dominance of the Chinese Communist Party. We need to be aware of that.
Right, which is the hallmark of a totalitarian regime. It will tolerate no other system of thought that it deems to be a threat to its desire for clamoring for complete and total domination of the people it governs. And Taiwan now stands against that. As you've rightly noted, it's attempting to be a porcupine, generally peaceful until it's bristled. But but it's very clear that mainland China has its sights on claiming Taiwan as one of its own.
Yes, and from what I have read, it is very clear that after, if they succeed in swallowing this porcupine, and this goes back to what I was saying before, this conversation that Jody and I had with this retired diplomat from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, he was saying that we need to bulk up our defenses, not expecting total victory necessarily against Communist China, but to hold out long enough for the cavalry to come. That is, so that our allies, especially the United States, but also Australia, Japan, and so forth, can come and intervene. Okay, now the thing to keep in mind here is the fact that if China succeeds in taking Taiwan, it will not be satisfied with that. China has already begun agitation directed, for example, against Japan, claiming that the Ryukyu Island chain, which includes Okinawa, right, that rightfully should be part of China. So they're already making claims there. And then listeners may also be aware of the fact that Chinese military sea vessels are constantly harassing citizens of the Philippines and laying claim to virtually all of the South China Sea. So it's one encroachment after another, and that's why we need to build up our presence there. And I can say with great confidence that all of those nations in the region, including not just Taiwan, but also Japan, Australia, the Philippines, Vietnam, and so forth, they want us to be a presence there. They welcome us.
Yep. And in fact, there are innumerable statements from Taiwanese officials and even Taiwanese NGOs that make it very clear that they want to remain vigilant, and they're hoping for allies like the United States to come to their aid so that they can continue to preserve their democratic way of life.
That's right. And part of that democratic way of life, I was very impressed by this, is the strong religious presence that you sense on the island. The majority of the population, of course, is primarily Buddhist or a mix of Buddhist and Taoist. But about 7% of the population is Christian, including a strong Catholic presence. And I was very impressed with the very visible public contribution made to civic and social life by the Christian Catholic population there. And it was, as I described in the article, a tremendous pleasure to be able to attend Mass there in Taipei, in the capital city.
In fact, the president of Taiwan, William Lai Ching-Ti, attending the annual National Prayer Breakfast, which is sponsored by Christian churches in Taiwan, that's demonstrative of a kind of religious harmony that you simply will not see in mainland China.
No, that's exactly right. And in fact, I've spoken with enough Chinese to know that, in fact, because of what I would have to call the paranoia of the Chinese Communist Party, they're constantly undertaking in China what they call inspections of churches and doing things like insisting that photographs of not only Xi Jinping, but also the tyrant Mao Zedong be placed prominently in churches. And in fact, they go into people's homes for inspections. And in some cases, will put photos of Xi Jinping and Mao forcibly up on display inside people's homes and regard that as a kind of loyalty test to the communist regime.
Right. And And therein lies the real concern, because if you take a, as I've been reading your article, but also what I know of Taiwan, if you take a barometer test of the general sense, the census populi, you come to a real realization that the people there are happy with their way of life. They don't want a complete assimilation into the communist regime, the totalitarian regime under Xi Jinping, and therefore the complete removal of all those things that they have come to appreciate in Taiwan.
Yes, and when you go there, and this is something that there's no substitute for making the effort to travel, because when you go to Taiwan, as I mentioned earlier, the openness, the sense of warmth and hospitality, the ease and comfort of how people mingle with each other in a relaxed way, the welcome that they extend to strangers, to foreigners like us, so different from the mainland, where more and more there's a kind of existential gloom, you know, in terms of mistrust of, mistrust of foreigners. In fact, the government in communist China, the government does everything it can to limit and prohibit any kind of civil society, and that includes the church. So there's such a difference. What Taiwan has is so precious, and that's something that is well worth defending and trying to encourage.
Just very briefly, in light of that realization, and in terms of the allowance of free market principles in human flourishing, talk about how the economy is flourishing in China, in Taiwan, in a way that it doesn't in mainland China.
Yes, and in fact, that's so important. I'm so glad that you mentioned this, Dr. Peter, because listeners may know that actually, despite the attempt by the Chinese Communist Party to conceal the statistics, actually, China's economy is in considerable trouble now. What Xi Jinping, ever since 2012 when he took power, and remember now, he's essentially appointed himself president for life, right? And he is insisting on his paramount concern being total control by the Chinese Communist Party, even at the expense of the economy. So anyone who raises his head up to be a kind of entrepreneur, you know, in the tech industry or any other field, it quickly gets knocked down. Whereas in Taiwan, you have a flourishing of creativity, most noticeable in the high-tech field. Listeners may have heard of the TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation. They are the leading, worldwide leaders in manufacturing the microchips that are so essential to high-tech. And in fact, that's just one example of the kind of flourishing of human creativity that takes place in the democracy we call Taiwan.
David, thank you so much for making the time to speak with us. This was a truly pivotal conversation.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be invited on your program, Dr. Peter.
My guest, David Pinault, Emeritus Professor of Religious Studies at Santa Clara University. We've been talking about Taiwan. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.